11:07. Boy, Ursa stole a minute from us. What happened there, Jacob? Now we have to readjust the scripts, Tom. It's so tightly scripted, the show. Hey, Tom, can you make an edit? We're going to lose a minute here.
I gotcha.
All right, good. Here's a wooden wagon that comes by every single time about this time. Normally, Tom drives it. We find out the thing's self-driving. Who knew? Tom was faking it the whole time. And on board the wagon, as the wagon comes on by right now, there's always a celebrity seated just to the left of the driver and has a teeny tiny lady in a pickle jar. Who's in that wagon today?
No.
What?
No.
No what?
Mm-mm.
What do you mean?
No.
Mm-mm. Uh-huh.
No.
Yeah. Get on get off the wagon.
No.
Get
no.
Off.
No.
Yes.
Get no.
Off. Get, yeah.
Hell
give
no.
Me, give me the
tea. No.
Give me.
No.
Give me. Okay.
I refuse. No.
Morgan, Tom, refusing to hand over the teeny tiny lady in the paper jar. All right, shootings are contagious. Prosecutor studies King County gun violence from a public health angle. A story in the Seattle Times, man, this thing is chock full of data. Lots and lots of graphs to look at, lots of people with lots of guns, and you see the A and B axis, and it shows you who gets shot. What was the biggest takeaway you got from the article, Tom?
Well, first off, I like the metaphor that you're using, that they treat it like an epidemiologist treats disease, contagion, that if you're trying to track down a particular disease, you look at where it goes and how it travels and how it spreads. And they said, let's look at gun violence not as a criminal justice matter. I mean, you can still do that. No prosecutors are going to take a different approach. But if you look at it as a public health issue, what do we find out about how these kinds of gun violence issues, who's involved? Can we predict who might be involved? If we can, are there ways, once we know this much, that you can intervene? The important thing initially is that when we started this a couple of years ago, Dow Constantine, there was no data on this. Every individual police department had their own separate data, and they played by different rules. So this time in this pilot project, they got 8 city departments to sort of consistently give this public health board information, and then by next year, I think they're going to expand it to all 40 police jurisdictions around, and because of that, we'll get an even much broader understanding of how things go. But I think, so the basic metaphor is an insight. Think of it as a disease, how you deal with it. The second thing is, the thing that they found out to me was, it felt sort of obvious, the idea that if you know somebody who's been shot, or know somebody who has shot, that increases your chances of getting shot, or being the shooter. And if you know a friend or a relative and all this, that it kind of grows within itself. That part seems pretty obvious. And they did mention in King County, in these 8, almost all of these gun violence things happen south of Seattle, that's where the concentration is. That, I think, that would be a good guess that most of us without any data wouldn't hunch at. Mm-hmm. And then the third thing is, what kind of intervention would actually work? And that's the tricky part, is how easily once we get this information, how can we change things? And the suggestion is, well, one thing is, if we could make our neighborhood safer and convince the youngsters coming up that their safety is already guaranteed by the society they live in, they don't have to carry a gun for their own protection, that would be a step forward. But boy, that seems like a big bridge to cross.
Right. So if you did look at it like it's contagious and it's actually some type of disease, then you would have, you could either inoculate, right? Or you could, you could inoculate or isolate. Somebody has TB, you don't let them into the general population. Or there's also educate. So these are some of the primary interventions that community comes in, or society comes in with, to stop the spread. The thing is, there is no spread of this. You see where it happens, and it continues to happen, and whether it's the 1970s, 80s, 90s, it's the same deal. You have a place where people are growing up, and there's no one to give them any sort of direction, or they reject the direction, or there's nothing to look forward to. You then have to get a gun, because the guy across the street has a gun. If he has a gun, you got to get a gun. If you don't have a gun, you're going to get shot. So basically what you have is, you don't have it spreading. It's not a disease. It's centrally located in one spot, and whether it's south side or south central or in Seattle, or whether it's happening in a particular part of Tacoma, or whether it happens in Chicago, wherever it is, It's about the fact that a 12-year-old boy has really nothing to look forward to. No one's there to mentor the kid. And then that kid ends up joining a gang, because most of these things, also, Tom, as you see the statistics, it's mostly gang, right? One guy shoots one guy, another guy shoots another guy. If you get shot once, chances of you getting shot again are pretty high. The reason they're going to shoot you a second time is because you didn't die the first time.
That's right, and that's why they give this really a tragic example of this 13-year-old girl, the county's youngest homicide victim so far this year. She was gunned down with a 19-year-old who had been, you know, mixed up in other gang shootings, I think it was. But they said, so with Elizabeth, she was first busted for spray painting gang graffiti. Then she was later caught with marijuana at school. The family then tried to get her into a boot camp or an at-risk youth program. Mm-hmm. But they didn't get support from the police or the school officials because she hadn't committed a serious crime. And they say, see, maybe what we ought to do is we ought to try to nip these things in the bud earlier. Mm-hmm. So she won't be a 13-year-old victim of a drive-by shooting because she's hanging out with gang members. There are chances for us to intervene earlier if we can. Mm-hmm. But you're right, John. I think if you're skeptical about this, it's like this. When I was reading it, and I support everything we're doing, and I don't have a problem with the metaphor like you do. But I do think that is such a hard bridge to make. This idea of, yeah, we can identify who the problem people are going to be, but can we intervene enough in their lives to make them whole and safe? And I don't know how. That's a steep climb, I'm afraid.
It reminds me, I've said this before on the air, bearing repeating, when William F. Buckley ran for mayor of New York, you know how I'm going to end this story, he was on stage at a debate, and the only reason he was there debating, he knew he'd never win, but he just said, I want to represent the conservative point of view in the very liberal city of New York. So he's, at one point, somebody says, and this is like 1967 or something like that, whatever the year was, how will we stop and prevent second generation being involved in welfare, crime, and dropout rates? And he said, William F. Buckley said, I will spell the word for you because you haven't heard the word in a long time, but it is the only way to effectively change the direction of people that are stuck in that system. And the word is orphanages. And, of course, the next day, the New York Times, the Post, and everybody that had thing talks about it. William F. Buckley, conservative, wants to take families, tear them apart, and put children in orphanages. His point was, the only way you stop the next generation is to break the cycle by removing that child from that home that started in the first place and have that kid go somewhere else. That's draconian, I guess, but it's probably, it would be more effective than just coming up with more stories and trying to make everybody else feel like, oh, it's contagious and it's coming to a neighborhood near you. No, it's not. It never has. It hasn't left those neighborhoods, and it's not going to spread. But they try to get people to think that, oh, yeah, you know what, at any minute it's going to be affecting you. No, it's in one neighborhood, and it's unfortunate that that's where it just continues to grow.
Well, first off, I think that a lot of bad experiences can happen in orphanages, too. I'm not sure that that's going to be the refuge that Mr. Buckley was predicting. Mm-hmm. But it does, if you think of orphanages as societally supported efforts at helping kids, then I could get behind that idea. I'm not sure that we need to divorce them from their parents and their siblings, because family is important. Mm-hmm. But if the family is infected, yes, that is a concern. And how best to intervene, I think, will be the next step. But it's going to be a much harder step than collecting all this data.
Yeah. Let's see. Prosecutors effectively accused Trump of defrauding voters. Now, what does that mean? So it was over the weekend and on Friday that Mueller goes after Cohen, goes after Flynn, goes after Manafort. And it seems like what they're trying to set up. Seattle's Morning News, former Attorney General Rob McKenna, and a close personal friend of mine, explained what Cohen is charged with and how this could implicate the president.
The violations are, first of all, recruiting a corporate source of a contribution. That was the American Media Incorporated contribution. They own National Enquirer, to buy the rights to Karen McDougal's story. It's illegal for a corporation to contribute to a federal election campaign. And the key here is they believe the purpose of purchasing her rights through this company was for the purpose of influencing the election. Number two, Cohen made a $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels. That exceeds the campaign contribution limit for a campaign. So that's a violation. And number three, the willful effort to hide these contributions, to disguise them through a shell corporation, for example, that's a failure to disclose. That's a violation. So this is essentially a roadmap for a future, potential future indictment of the president, to the extent that this shows that they think Cohen was working at the president's direction.
Seems like the whole thing is at the president's direction, because we'll try to get him on. I don't think they're going to get him on, you know, trying to buy silence. It'll be did the president sit down with Cohen or Manafort or Flynn and listen to the testimony that they were going to give and read the answers to some of the questions? And did those guys, did the president himself specifically say this, right? Isn't that the part that took Nixon down? And also with Clinton, was it the idea that they don't want you in there influencing possible witnesses? They think that's the thing that's going to hook the president.
Yeah, well, I mean, if he's hookable, the felony business that Cohen is accusing him of, or now the independent counsel, is exactly that. It's that at this point, the direction, it seems pretty clear, according to Cohen's testimony, that he did this at the behest of the president and with the president knowing. There is some information, according to the charges brought against Cohen, that he did run by his answers to Congress through the White House. And I can't remember now if it's Trump or if just the White House staff, but they knew that he was going to testify falsely and, in effect, approved it before he did and didn't object to it. But the idea is that if the commission of a crime is directed by the president, even if you don't think the crime is that big a deal, that is itself impeachable if it's a felony, and these are felonies. But then the question is, so let's say that you think you've got, let's say you have individual one or the president, and you have him, dead to rights that he did order these payments. Now, he can make a counter argument that I ordered these payments not to affect the election. I ordered these payments to protect my wife from having this splash up before me. That can be his defense. And if that's his defense and you buy that defense, then you cannot find him guilty, because it has to be you're doing this in order to affect the election that is the real problem.
I thought it began 19 months ago. We're looking for collusion with Russia. Was that just a canard? Was that just sort of red herring, when really they had prior information about Flynn? They had been following others that were involved in the campaign, and they knew that there may be some direction from Trump, candidate Trump, saying lie about this and lie about that. But it starts with Russia collusion, which is what got all the headlines, but it seems like that's not really panning out. So maybe the backdoor is to go get him on this, that he was directing people to lie, and by directing somebody to lie, therefore you are also committing the crime, right?
I mean, that's what they did say. This is like the tax evasion angle to get the mafia bosses. You can't prove that they ordered the killings, but you can prove tax evasion. But actually, John, I think you're right. If all they had was the Cohen stuff, the thing is, I think more significantly, the Michael Flynn business, and apparently he talked a lot. I mean, they had 19 different interviews with him. But Michael Flynn was himself working with the Russians on something. So the whole Russian collusion angle will be, I think, more fleshed out when we hear more about the Michael Flynn business. Mm-hmm. But this particular thing, the one thing that they seem to have the most evidence of right now is the felony stuff. But it started off with the Russian collusion, and still may end up that way, or at least in a Russian investigation. Because I'll grant you, I don't know. I mean, I've always said this. I personally don't think that Trump is sharp enough actually to pull this off, to actually collude with the Russians to actually win an election. I don't give him that much credit even.
Right.
But I do think it seems to be more and more true, based on everything we've heard from Flynn and from Cohen, that Trump lied about his connections to Russia, and there were a lot more ties on the campaign staff or working with Trump with Russia than they ever let on.
I see.
And so that just the smoke. And it sounds like there might be a little fire.
Yeah.
It's not. It doesn't seem like it's going to be this huge fire until we see ultimately what the transcripts or the Mueller report will be.
Right. So Russia and Trump, Putin and Trump, didn't steal the election from Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton was just a bad candidate, but Trump also had his friends write checks to strippers. So it seems to
well,
be.
Well, yeah, if that, yeah. I mean, that's the least, that's the least case you mm-hmm. could bring against Trump. You may find out much more about Trump, but right now, it'll be that, yeah, he did that to affect an election because he figured that was going to happen, right? That was going to be a problem with his, you know, his campaign. Mm-hmm. He was trying to put out that fire, not knowing that there was going to be an Access Hollywood tape that would come out later as well.
Let's see. Google's auto-complete suggestions for every state. Matt, did you get it? This is you referring to this story earlier because of dyslexia, right, Tom?
Right. So you had a very amusing personal account, John, of you were unprepared to discuss about the value of walking a cat on a leash because you Googled cat on a lease instead of leash.
Yes.
And you put it, you know, and I thought that's very, it's perfect. And it also makes sense about this autocorrect story. When Google, you know how Google autocorrects, they anticipate what you're going to ask them, and they figured out that each state, there are certain questions that everybody asks about in a particular state. Mm-hmm. We can do state of Washington, really not that interesting to tell you the truth, but the one in Texas, the third most popular question that comes up about Texas is, will Texas succeed? S-U-C-C-E-E-D, uh-huh. And they figured out that that's probably, they meant secede,
yes.
Because that's often a talk, but they didn't know how to spell secede, so most people type in, will Texas succeed? Because I thought, obviously, that seems like an odd question. And it's just, yes, you know, you put your mind to it, Texas, I'm sure you can do it. But anyway, I just thought that was a clever little misspelling.
Has your spelling gotten better, worse, or stayed exactly the same ever since the ability to be able to have autocorrect came into play?
Oh, to me?
Yeah.
I'm not I can't stand autocorrect because I don't trust autocorrect. So I'm a really good speller, always have been a really good speller. So, yeah, my spelling has certainly not gotten worse. But I understand if you're not a great speller to begin with, you're going to rely on machines. You'll never have to know how to spell here again.
Yeah, or there, which I'm always stuck with. Is it I-E-R or E-I-R?
E-I-R.
It's E-I-R.
E-I-R, meaning ownership.
Make a note of that. T-H-E-I-R. I think at some point my phone is going to be like, E-I-R, okay? That's the last time I'm going to tell you. I depend so much on it that my spelling has gotten so sloppy that I put in like letters that I think might have appeared at some point in the last 400 years in that word.
And they'll correct for you. Yeah. No, it's a convenient device.
Oh, yeah.
I just hate it when I'm trying to write an odd word, and then they correct it, and I got to go back, and I hate that.
Oh, stop using your odd words, Tom. All right. Let's see. Ursula stops by. We'll talk a little bit about coming in with
Holiday Magic.
Holiday Magic, which we normally used to do our, like, 12-hour fundraisers. Now we've broken it up into sections. It's just as wonderful. It's Holiday Magic, a chance to give back to kids in foster care system here in the state of Washington. We got that, plus your letters as well. And Andrew, I swear we'll get to why your weekend was an 8 compared to Tom's 5. We'll go back and forth. You'll say something great, and then Tom will give us something crappy, and we'll get a chance to compare and contrast. Right back. We're going to ask Ursula to stick around for just a moment to talk to us about a great Northwest tradition that every year when people step up for Treehouse and donate time, money, and it's always successful. But Tom, do you mind if we go in the basement? Just a real quick compare and contrast. The beginning of the show at 9 o'clock, I asked you, how was your weekend? You gave it a 5. And I went in there, Andrew, and I asked Andrew, how was his weekend? And he said it was an 8. So hang on a second. Coming down. By the way, Lake Washington Windows and Doors could probably do something for you down here because this place is a mess. The windows are all cracked, and the seal's broken, and you need to get the door fixed, too.
Like Thanks window. For the suggestion.
Yeah, well, I'm doing a commercial down in the basement for you.
Thank you.
Okay, so you gave your weekend an 8, and Tom gave his a 5. So tell us a bit about your weekend. Why is it getting an 8?
So one of the reasons was that it rained finally after like a week.
All right, Tom, it rained for him. Yours?
It rained here, too.
All right.
Son of a gun.
All right. Back to Andrew.
Didn't have to go to work.
Okay. Tom?
I didn't have to go to work, son of a gun.
Andrew?
I got to go golfing with my dad at Jackson Park.
All right. Tom?
Well, I got a chance to walk. After my PT on Friday, I was not allowed to go to work today like I was hoping. But they did say you can walk a block. Try walking a block. Paige and I walked a block to go to a restaurant, and my leg kind of like wobbled. I lost my balance, and that was very disconcerting.
Okay.
So I'm not as strong as I thought I was.
And finally?
Got a bunch of schoolwork done that I wanted to get done.
There we go. And that's why Andrew had an 8, and you had a 5, Tom. Okay?
That's right.
All right, good.
But I am getting out. Did you notice, John? No, that's the big news.
I'm still in the basement. Hang on. Hang on.
Would help if you turn on the lights.
Thank you, Andrew.
You're welcome. Have
all
fun.
Right. All right, we will. What does have fun mean? Okay. Hey, Ursula, we asked you to stick around.
Yes.
For Cairo Radio, for the longest time, has been involved with Treehouse. We used to do like 12 hours. For years and years. And it was the listeners that were able to raise millions of dollars to support foster care kids living in the state of Washington.
Okay, let's not say millions, but a lot of money. Or millions over the 30
years. Oh, right,
years.
Right,
sure.
Right.
Okay.
After all the years,
yes,
right.
Yes,
you know, at the end of the day, they would look at the amount of money brought in. It was quite considerable, and it was because the listeners would listen to Cairo Radio. We would let them know about all the great programs that were out there, and Treehouse was able to benefit, and the kids ultimately.
And for those of you who don't know who Treehouse is, so Treehouse works with foster children to make sure that they can be set up to have a successful life. Mm-hmm. And so, as we know, there are many foster kids, and it's hard to find foster parents right now. That's another thing. So there are many ways that you can help out, but this is the time of the year that we ask everybody, hey, if you can just make the holidays a little brighter for these foster children, it would be great. I recently had a chance to talk to Pearl Jam's guitarist, Mike McCready. So that's what I'm going to share with you. So he has volunteered for Treehouse for many, many years. Music, obviously a lifelong passion for him, but for many foster kids too, music is the only constant that they have in their lives. Mm-hmm. So he really looked forward to this opportunity that he had to work with some aspiring musicians, and this is that story. As the guitarist for Pearl Jam, Mike McCready is in his element when he's on stage with other members of the iconic Seattle rock band. But when he invited 5 young aspiring musicians to Pearl Jam's studio to create a song, McCready admits he wasn't sure exactly what to expect.
I didn't know what I was going to do exactly, Ursula, when I got there, because I didn't know what they could do or what their strengths and weaknesses or what mine were, you know?
For many years, McCready has worked closely with Treehouse, a nonprofit whose goal is to help give foster children the opportunities and support they need to become successful adults. All 5 of the teens he was going to mentor had experienced or are still living in foster care. When Sergio arrived at the studio that day, he was a bit starstruck.
Just seeing him, it freaked me out a little because I was so happy.
Ricardo also had to calm his nerves at the beginning.
I don't know what chords are. Like you told me, play C or G. I don't know what that is.
McCready says the young men came to the studio with all the ideas. He just helped them shape everything into a working piece of music. And with his mentoring, it only took a couple of hours before Ricardo was beatboxing and playing the guitar on an acoustic hip-hop ballad called Try So Hard. The song is about perseverance. The words tell their story.
I didn't really have family when I was a kid. And I don't know what family means, but listening to music helped me. And that's what made me realize that music is my friend. It's my family to me.
The song's lyrics include these lines. There's no mistakes to be made. There's only room to be great. Every time you make a move, let it be by your fate. McCready was blown away.
There's a message within those lyrics that talks about making mistakes, but they're not mistakes. They're opportunities. And that's something we can all learn. That's something I need to learn every frickin' day, you know? That a mistake is an opportunity for growth.
For Sergio, being able to collaborate with the guitarist for Pearl Jam was an experience he will never forget.
I learned that even though he's popular and he's a big rock star, you know, he's just like the rest of all of us. He's human, he's fun, you know, he's smart and everything. He's just It's awesome.
McCready insists he got more out of this experience than the teens did.
It changed my perspective in terms of like, wow, these kids are creating music. And they've been through such dire circumstances with abuse and addiction or neglect. And they're creating this really cool music, and it's important to them. I will always cherish that day, and I hope we get to do it again.
You can help make the holidays bright for youth in foster care by texting MAGIC to 98973.
Pearl Jam is such a great band with such a huge conscience. I mean, was it they had the concert, I think it was in August or September, and a big portion of their money went to homeless, and then to have Mike McCready, who's always been involved, Mike McCready, whether it's Crohn's disease, that he's got that going on and raising money for that research. It seems like these guys must spend a lot of time, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but outside of offstage, that sort of idea of what rock and roll is about. Huge heart from Pearl Jam.
Biggest hearts. And he, I believe him when he says he truly feels like he got more out of this whole thing.
Oh, I mean,
he
really. That.
So just a reminder, though, MAGIC 98973. Please text. Please help us out. These kids are so deserving, so talented. And, you know, if you can help out, we'd really appreciate it.
And Treehouse really does know how to work with your money. Even just a donation of $10 a month. You could do a monthly donation of $10 goes so far. How about this? $15, if you donate just $15, the kids get an entire backpack full of pens and notepads, notebooks, everything they need so that they're well-prepared going into class. So just small donations add up fast, and they all end up affecting the life of a foster care kid in a positive way. Text MAGIC, that's MAGIC, to 98973 to find out more about how you can help a Treehouse, especially this time of the year or throughout the year. We'll take a fast break. We'll come right back. Thanks, Ursula.
You're welcome.
Not too late to text us as well at the Online Trading Academy and 98973. Come on in, everybody. With Lou Dalvey here from you. We'll find out who letter of the day is right after this. All righty, here we go. Tom, rehab tomorrow?
Rehab tomorrow? Yes, I'll get the latest. It's at 4 o'clock and we'll get the latest. Right now, I'm shooting for maybe Friday. Big glorious entrance on Friday. I don't know, but I have not gotten clearance yet.
Wow. Okay. By the way, I was supposed to bring a enema in and give myself a nose enema today.
Yes,
I went to the drugstore. I went to the drugstore on Friday and I explained to the guy what I'm looking for. He sends me down aisle 11, and you know which one I'm talking about. And there's the enema, the regular enemas that you're supposed to give you. But none of them would work on my nose. I needed the big bag with the weird yellowed tube going down into this, like, tip kind of thing. Like old school enema. Something you'd see from, what was the name of that movie where the girl was,
Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, close enough. All right, here you go, some mailman. Here you go, some mailman.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm
Carrie.
The mailman.
Carrie was a little bit.
I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman.
Close. All right,
hello.
Oh, teeny tiny lady, forget that letter of the day, but first let's get started.
I will start off with child care, the kind of a child care crisis of sorts here in Seattle. Allison from Seattle weighs in.
Uh-huh.
Common sense determines the ratio. Have you ever taken care of 7 infants, John?
Mm-hmm.
It would be impossible to meet the needs of each baby.
Yes.
Yeah, my wife is telling me, babies need face contact, and when they don't, they get this kind of non-attachment syndrome.
I know.
Yeah.
206, we plan on starting our family. Banked my wife's salary for 2 years. Refinanced her home so we could afford to have my wife stay home by her choice. I just can't understand when people are surprised by how expensive it is having kids.
Yes. It is more expensive now, though, than when we were raising kids and before that, too, you know, in terms of a child care. But, yeah, I understand. Okay, on the Miami Miracle, I figure we'd hear from him since I called him out on the air. Andy on the road less traveled. Hi-ho, fellas, and here we are at Monday again, and a slightly dark Monday for that Miami Miracle. It's not the end of the day, fellas, but how did I know you two clowns would bring it up right out of the gates? And sure, I suppose I deserved it, Tom. Mm. But here's the thing, fellas.
Yeah.
If you are a true Pats or any New England fan, you're always waiting for the other shoe to drop. and you're rarely disappointed. First off, what is he talking about? Boston teams have been more successful than any franchise. But it's just one game and a fluke at that, so it's okay. Take your shots. No wonder you guys are number five in the ratings behind Reverend Cleophas Gospel Hour airing from 2 to 3 a.m. But until y'all are batting 500 in the big game, I'll say it loud, I'll say it proud, go Pats! Ugh. I need a drink.
Yes. We'll skip the Uranus thing and go to Walking Cats on a Leash. 425 says, I walk my cat every day, weather permitting. My cat loves it.
Okay. And by the way, this guy claims Uranus is a real place.
Yeah.
425. Hey, everyone, I'm single. That's anyone walking a cat.
909. I would say cats, I've encountered, hate being on leashes. Cats, not dogs, they're territorial. They're not possessive. So leaving their house out and being forced to walk in the open causes them stress. Okay. More people wrote about the cat on the leash.
I know. And then finally, here's an endorsement of our podcast, John.
Yes.
206. I'm an avid podcast listener that had a chance today to tune into the live broadcast. So far, I've heard a bunch of commercials and some weird conversation about cats going outside. 10-10, guys.
Okay. Autocorrect. Carrie Ann Bothell says, I misspelled inconvenience so badly once. The word corrected it to incontinence. I sent out emails to several doctors and nurses apologizing for their incontinence.
On the Behind Enemy Lines segment, 425 says, hey, take it easy with the frying pan. I think Bobby Wagner got clocked twice. Go Hawks.
Yeah, and remember the time somebody wrote in telling us that that's a form of violence? It's like, it's a sound effect. Monday Night Football is not the only program watched tonight. The grandest, most watched thing on Monday night is WWE's 3 hours of man opera known as Monday Night Raw. And WWE says it must be true sign. A local wrestling referee hashtag making Washington wrestling great again. 5-3. Okay.
On the We Three Kings suggestion, 425 says, it's a no-brainer, guys. You need to have a couch on the stage with an iPad on it and have Tom sing with you over Skype.
I thought of that, but the problem is, Tom, there's a 1 second delay. So if we go to start the song, it's We Three Kings of Orion R, and you're like, you're right behind us. It sounds like we're doing in the round. Let's see. The Mueller investigation.
Not in the round, but around.
Around. 206 says, remember Ken Starr went after Clinton on Whitewater, and what'd they get him on?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A review of today's show, Larry in West Seattle.
Oh, good.
Curly is still ruthlessly shaming Tom's million-dollar wound. Mm-hmm. Students swoon at imaginary slights, and the Legion of Snowflakes grows every day.
Yes.
New houses are being built on Soviet bloc architecture. Cats on a lease looking to hide from the landlord, and the homeless are picking the Vikings. Gee, wonder where those guys are from. Tom, get well, and Curly, give us a go Hawks!
Go Hawks! That's right. All right, hold on. Teeny Tiny Lady, you've got two parts in the whole show. Why is she never ready? She lives in a pickle jar.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
There you are.
Comes from Higgy in Rochester.
Oh, good.
While I sit here in first class listening to Tom and Curly, I have received ads for leg braces, pec implants, movie tickets for pretentious Oscar bait, and pull-up cheat devices. Coincidence? I think not. Oh. Love the show, guys.
That's not fair. Referring back to that app story. All right.
Very, very clever, Higgy.
Final score, Tom.
Oh, my God. 19-14.
All right.
Out of time. Bye-bye.